It's a real thing. There's no question about that. Reportedly over 400 million users worldwide of cryptocurrency now as of the end of 2022. So this is a major league thing. It's a mainstream thing. There's just no question about that, to the point now where the government is trying to hijack cryptocurrency and make it its own. There is now reported that the International Monetary Fund is working with central banks around the world to establish a central cryptocurrency. We know that the Biden administration's Treasury Department has issued what they consider to be preliminary guidelines on creating a digital currency for the United States of America. And I got that executive order cited there on the top of your outline. I believe the government wants to hijack, at least the United States government wants to completely hijack the use of cryptocurrency to replace paper currency in its entirety. As we all know, the income tax is driven by the income tax base is income, right? What did you earn? How did you earn it? And they can't track cash. And they've been driving themselves crazy for 100 years trying to figure out ways to track cash. Well, cryptocurrency solves that problem for them. And I am completely convinced that the United States government is going to do that, or at least try to do that, for purposes of creating this cashless society, something my dad talked about 50 years ago. They want to eliminate cash. And everybody thought he was crazy. But no, here it is now. They've gotten to the point where it's where now they have actual feasibility to do it. And cryptocurrency is on the IRS radar. Now, most of the young people that are out there dealing with crypto these days have no idea that the IRS is paying very, very close attention to this, and they have been for some time. Now we've got a question on the 1040 form that specifically asks about the use of crypto, and the intensity of this question was dialed up, all right? It first showed up in 2020, and it was just a simple question about receiving, sending, selling, and so on. But on the 2022 1040, the intensity of the question was dialed up. Now it says, at any time during 2022, did you A, receive as a reward or reward payment for property or services, or B, sell or exchange or gift or otherwise dispose of a crypto asset? And you've got to answer the question yes or no. We're going to talk later on about who has to answer the question and who's got to check the yes box and who's got to check the no box, and we'll get to that. And of course, the IRS added a question on the form 433A about 2 years ago, whether a delinquent taxpayer has cryptocurrency. So then that's got to be provided. So the IRS is, I wrote an article on this issue in the October-November 2022 issue of PTT about how the criminal investigation is ramping up criminal sanctions for crypto use. Nathan will be talking about that specifically, but I talk in detail about how the IRS is using criminal resources to go after crypto. And now we've got the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act that was passed in 2021 that requires the reporting of cryptocurrency exchanges have to report on a form 1099B the use of cryptocurrencies. So add to that the fact that the IRS is now, and has been for the last 4 or 5 years, or probably longer than that even, using John Doe summonses to ferret out those people that are using cryptocurrency for buys and sells, exchanges, and so on, and not reporting the tax consequences on their tax returns. What we're seeing developing here, friends, with cryptocurrency is exactly what we saw developing with offshore bank accounts 20 years ago. The IRS is putting on a full court press with respect to gathering up crypto information and capturing as much as they can in terms of crypto assets. So cryptocurrency is now covered by both criminal and civil laws, and in a lot of cases, it transcends the tax laws themselves. And Nathan will be talking about that. So that brings us up to our first polling question. Now, I've got 4 polling questions laced through this seminar. You need to answer all 4 polling questions. You're going to answer all 4 polling questions in one email to Jean. Send your email to Jean@taxhelponline.com. You all have her email address. One email with answers to all 5 questions. All right, don't send 5 emails. Don't make this a nightmare. Make sure you got your name and your PTIN in there so that we can get you the proper credit. So the first polling question that you're going to answer is, what is today's date? What is today's date? And for those of you that are not paying attention, for those of you that spend all of your days on golf courses day after day, you probably not know, probably don't know what day it is. It is the 24th. It's May the 24th. It would be Wednesday. So that's our first polling question. May 24 is today's date. All right. So now, get remember, all four polling questions, answers in one email sent to Gene with your full name and your P10 number, and you'll get your 1 hour CPE credit, CLE credit for this course. So now that brings us up to the criminal tax law issue. So I want to introduce Nathan McPherson, part of the McPherson Group team of attorneys. And Nathan has been practicing, has been an active TFI member, TDI member for, I don't know, 20 years, 15 years, whatever it's been. So Nathan, please come on and you need to be unmuted. So we need to unmute Nathan.
Yes, I think I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
There you go. Nathan's unmuted. So, all right, go ahead, Nathan. I'm going to mute myself here. And you have.
Oh, Dan muted himself so we don't hear the end. Okay, so good morning or good day, everyone. Going to talk about criminal law issues regarding cryptocurrency. And so the threshold issue for that is a distinction between whether you're simply buying cryptocurrency the same way you might buy mutual fund or shares of Apple stock or something. You hold it, you think it's going to go up, you're going to make money. You might sell some of it to, you know, to liquidate it to make a purchase at some point. And that needs to be reported as capital gains, capital losses, the same as stocks, which could arise in a criminal law issue for failure to file, failure to pay, et cetera, which we'll discuss a little bit later. But the first thing is that this distinction must be made between whether you're acquiring it simply as an asset for investment for your own purposes, or if you're engaged in money transmission. And so the Code of Federal Regulations states that it is a facts and circumstances test. Whether a person is a money transmitter, as described in this section, is a matter of facts and circumstances, according to the Code of Federal Regulations. So the government looks at it as, you know, what's actually going on? What are you doing? And if you are engaged in money transmitting, then you must register both with the Treasury and, depending on your state, with the state. And there's a list of states you can just search online because it's changing all the time of where you need to register. And so what are these facts that would make you a money transmitter as opposed to buying it for your own investment? And it's sort of interesting because you might think, well, I'm just, you know, I've gotten a lot of crypto and I told my buddy, you know, hey, you ought to get into this. Hey, I'll sell you so many Bitcoin so that you don't have to go somewhere else and buy it. Does that make you a money transmitter? Well, FinCEN issued regulations back about 10 years ago on this. So this is going on a while. And in those guidelines, FinCEN had said, the circumstance constitutes, under FinCEN's regulations, sending, quote, value that substitutes for currency, so that would be Bitcoin, other cryptocurrency, to another person or to another location constitutes money transmission, unless a limitation to or exemption from the definition applies, and those don't generally fall into what we're discussing, those exceptions. This circumstance constitutes transmission, quote, to another location, namely from the user's account at one location, e.g. a user's real currency account at a bank, to the user's convertible virtual currency account with the administrator. It might be argued that the exchanger is entitled to the exemption from the definition of money transmitter for persons involved in the sale of goods or the provision of services, except that they aren't. And so you're not a money transmitter if you are, say, a broker who sells IBM stock and somebody takes their money from, say, you know, US Bank, Bank of America, whatever, gives you $100, and you then put $100 worth of IBM stock in that person's brokerage account. Because, I mean, all you're selling stock, you of course have to be licensed to sell stock and so forth. And perhaps that's why there's that exception, because you're already licensed with a securities license. But here, if the person is taking money from Wells Fargo, you know, $5, putting it into your bank account, and you're taking $500 worth of Bitcoin and putting in that person's wallet, you've just engaged in money transmission. And these cases arise out of people oftentimes on a platform called localbitcoins.com, which is kind of like a Craigslist type thing. You know, hey, I have a sofa for sale or whatever. They say, you know, hey, I'm willing to sell you Bitcoin, $500 worth, $200 worth, $1,000 worth, whatever it might be. And for whatever reason, people go onto this website, localbitcoins.com, and there are several others, but that seems to be the most popular, at least as far as reading the cases goes. And they make contact, and there's actually like an online platform, kind of like an Amazon type platform that facilitates this, or like a VRBO platform, something like that. And the buyer sends you money, oftentimes cash, which ought to, you know, raise alarms, and that's why the government's getting involved. They'll put $500 cash into your bank account, or, you know, Western Union, whatever, get it to you. And then you put the $500, $1,000, whatever it is, of Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency in that person's wallet. And you've just engaged in money transmission, and you need to A, be registered with FinCEN, a federal registration, and B, depending what state you're in. And a lot of the states have this requirement, you know, California, Oregon, Washington, all sorts of the states, New York, Illinois, et cetera. You have to be registered with your state, and it's a separate crime to not register with the state and with the feds. So there are criminal penalties, as you see in the outline, for anyone who knowingly conducts, controls, manages, supervises, directs, or owns all or part of an unlicensed money transmitting business. And that's a long way to say, you know, if you're involved in it. Now, what does the knowingly mean? We know about the, in the tax crimes, there's this knowledge requirement or willfulness requirement. You have to knowingly do so or willfully evade the taxes. Is that the same here? You have to purposely say, hey, I know I got to register, but screw the feds, I ain't registering, I'm going to do it anyway. No, that's not the knowingly. And the clients we see coming in have no idea about this. What you have to knowingly do is knowingly take the cash and give the cryptocurrency. And that's, you know, pretty clear, right? You knew that you were actually sending cryptocurrency and somebody was giving you cash for it. That's sort of obvious. So the knowingly here is not a very high burden. It's more of a facts and circumstances. Did somebody give you money and you gave that person cryptocurrency? The maximum punishment is a fine and 5 years in prison. As I just said, knowingly simply means you knew you were engaged in the exchanging. The, you know, money going one way, cryptocurrency going the other way. They give a definition of unlicensed money transmitting business in the code, that it's not licensed in the state of operation, and such failure to license is itself a misdemeanor or felony under state law. And as I mentioned, many of the states, perhaps most of them, it's changing every day. Some states are becoming sort of safe havens, or they're encouraging people to move there. I believe is it Puerto Rico, I think, has become a hub where they're encouraging cryptocurrency investment there. And so they are you know, less on the regulation, whereas other places, obviously California regulates breathing, right? So you have to be registered in California. So that itself is a crime. And this is going to be an or. So any of these make you unlicensed. So if you're not licensed in the state, and if the state law requires you to register, you also have to register with the feds, which is kind of funny because you anyway have to register with the feds. Number two, the business is not registered under 31 United States Code, Section 5330. And as stated, failure to register is a crime. And then C, the third possibility, is cryptocurrency transactions involve funds the defendant knows are related to unlawful activities. So also, if you know that you're engaged in unlawful, you know, money laundering, basically, then that itself is a crime, which, of course, is the crime of money laundering as well. And the reason, at least the official reason behind all of this, is that cryptocurrency is often involved in money laundering in other crimes. As you read in the article in the recent Pillow Talks Taxes, that it's a way to get stolen funds somewhere else and make it untraceable, or at least in theory untraceable. And the organized crime rings use unsuspecting people. So if you look at all the cases on people being prosecuted, it's mom and pop shops. I think I mentioned one in the article of a father who is, you know, about my dad's age, a lawyer who's about my age, I'm sorry, and a son who's about my age, and their lawyer who's about my brother Scott's age. And it was a small business. They were operating ATMs around Ohio, and the investigation was headed up actually by the Secret Service, you know, the president's Secret Service headed up the investigation, and they were, you know, arrested and are charged with being an unlicensed money transmission business. And ironically, I just, right after writing the article, I took a trip. I stayed at the hotel by the airport, and I got out of the elevator, and staring at me was an ATM that said, not only can you get cash here, but you can get cryptocurrency here. So the very thing that, you know, people were just indicted for in Ohio was going on in my hotel in Washington. Although, you know, query whether the operator of that ATM was licensed, and, you know, that being, again, this big distinction. So these mom and pop people are, you know, going on to local Bitcoins. Obviously, it's not some giant corporation engaged in selling $500 worth of Bitcoin. And you think, you know, 500 bucks, who cares? But these people actually go around with their Smurfs, so-called, and gather up all the stolen funds and then send 500 to Bob and 500 to Fred and 1500 to Sally and so forth and get it into cryptocurrency. And then at that point, you know, it's anywhere in the world, right? It's on the wallet. It's electronic. You can access it on the moon if you want to. So it's very handy for money laundering and thus the big crackdown. And that's what we've seen in our cases where our clients had no idea. They just thought they'd get rich or make a couple extra bucks trading cryptocurrency. And when, of course, when it's going up, it's easier to make money. When it's, you know, no matter what you do going up, if you hold it for a little bit, you make money, and they have no idea. Another argument that we've seen as to why we don't think we need to register, I'm not really selling it as well, because I bought a bunch of the cryptocurrency. It's my cryptocurrency, and now I'm just transferring it. So I'm not engaged in, okay, you gave me $5, I go buy Bitcoin and give it to you. That doesn't matter under the definition I read earlier, right? Transmission to another location, namely from the user's account at one location, that is like, you know, a real currency at a bank, to the user's convertible virtual currency account. It's moving from one location to another. It doesn't matter. This argument that it's my own portfolio and I'm just liquidating doesn't hold water. And that's been brought up in a lot of these cases, and it simply doesn't work. Prosecution can occur under federal or state law, as noted. Of course, the feds have a big crackdown on this. And we mentioned in the article that the head of examination for small business self-employed, which is probably most of us are dealing with, SBSC collections, SBSC examinations function, right? And so the head of the exam function said, we're cracking down on marijuana, which is perhaps another Zoom conference topic. We've been dealing with a lot of that recently, and cryptocurrency. It is a target, definitely at the federal level, but also, as I said, under state law. And the Ohio example was headed up besides by the U.S. Secret Service, Ohio, and it was actually a state law indictment that went down, not a federal one in that case. And so there's a lot of state federal cooperation on this because it's operating all around the country. Besides the basic cryptocurrency, what we see is the clients are facing a laundry list. Obviously, you know, the prosecutors are going to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. So we have things such as willful failure to file because, hey, or, you know, probably not filing your tax return either, as in the case of our clients coming to us, they haven't filed and thus they also haven't reported their crypto transactions. Tax evasion, money laundering, bank fraud, failure to register with FinCEN is, of course, the topic of this discussion. Conspiracy, all of these white collar crimes are related. And Dan, I think since we're discussing other potential crimes, you have something you wanted to chime in that people might need to write down, take note of. You need to unmute yourself.
Okay, yeah, that brings us up to polling question number two here, guys. So polling question, remember, we got four polling questions. We need answers to all four polling questions in one email sent to Gene at gene@taxhelponline.com with your full name and your PTIN. The second polling question is, who presented the discussion on criminal law issues? Who presented the discussion on criminal law issues?
Now, this is a trick question because they might get the name wrong.
That's right. Their
first name.
This is this. You can't just say McPherson because there's three of them on the call here. You got to say Nathan McPherson presented the discussion on criminal law issues. So that's polling question number two. Who presented the discussion on criminal law issues? Answers to all four questions. One email to Gene with your full name and your PTIP. All right, Nathan, back to you. Is there anything else on the criminal law that you want to wrap up here?
I think, yeah, that wraps it up. Again, perhaps as an overview, facts and circumstances test. Are they moving funds and cryptocurrency? I suppose we didn't mention this, but it's worth mentioning again. Cryptocurrency is money or currency or whatever under that definition. So it does qualify, despite the fact that on your tax return, it's treated like an investment. For purposes of this, it's treated like a currency. And so it is regulated under that. And the facts and circumstances are fairly straightforward. Did you just buy it because you thought it's going up, the same as you bought a mutual fund? Or are you engaged in somebody's giving you some other currency and you're giving them this cryptocurrency? And so it's moving from the one account to the other.
All right, good. Okay, so Nathan, thanks Nathan for that. Nathan did a recap of his article that appeared in the newsletter here for last month's issue. I think it was a double issue. We also had the special report on trader status, which Scott and I worked on quite a bit over the winter. And so that was in that report as well. So let's talk about the civil tax issues here now. The dollars and cents taxability, not taxability of crypto trades. The biggest problem that I'm seeing with young people in America is they do not understand the tax consequences of the crypto trades. And in fact, I published an article or I wrote an article that was published by National Review here last fall on the problems that are associated with reporting crypto. And I've identified three problems, and we're going to get into those. But first of all, we need to understand that the IRS very early on, at the very beginning of this whole crypto business, back in 2014, 2013, they defined crypto as property. All right. So there's not a whole separate section of the Internal Revenue Code that deals with cryptocurrency as a unique asset. It's just considered property. It's no different than, as Nathan mentioned, as a stock or a bond or a mutual fund or anything else. All right. It's defined as a convertible currency. A convertible currency is currency in which the value is measured in real currency. Right? The real currency that we care about is the United States dollar, and it acts as a substitute for real currency. So that's what crypto is. All right. It's to be treated no differently than any stock or any bond or anything else. All right. So what are the three common problems? All right. I want to break these down one at a time, give you some examples here. The examples are written in the outline, but I'll take you by the hand through this stuff. First of all, computing gains on the buy and sell of cryptocurrency. The capital gains are measured by US dollars. All right. A gain in value, when it's a realized gain, has to be computed based on the buy and the sell, right? Just like anything else. So my example, bottom of page three of the outline, a citizen purchased Bitcoin for $5 a coin, later sells it for $15 a coin. He realizes $10 a coin in gain. And the gain is either taxed as long-term or short-term capital gain, depending on the holding period. Now the holding period for capital gains for long-term capital gains is more than a year. So if you held your crypto, your crypto for more than a year and you sell it, it's treated as long-term. If it's 1 year or less, it's treated as short-term. All right. That gain has to be reported on the tax return. So when did you buy it? When did you sell it? What was the buy amount? What was the sell amount? That determines the gain or loss, and it has to be reported on the tax return. All right. Another aspect of reporting capital gain is when you trade one crypto for another crypto. You buy Bitcoin and you trade it for, you know, some other coin. I can't name all the different coins that are out there. It doesn't matter. There's dozens of them that are out there now. There's all kinds of them. Crypto, Bitcoin is just one of them. But if you take one crypto and trade it for another, that's treated as a disposition. It's treated as a sale and it's taxable. So let's say you hold 50 Bitcoins that are worth $1,000 each. The cost basis is $100 each. All the Bitcoin is traded for another digital currency without taking any cash. The swap of the Bitcoin is treated as a sale. Whether the gain is long-term or short-term depends on the holding period. So the gain in this example is $900 per Bitcoin. All right, you had the Bitcoin at 100, you just traded it, it was worth 1,000. So now you've got capital gain of $900 per coin, but you've acquired new Bitcoin. So your basis in the new, you've acquired new crypto. So your basis in the new crypto is the purchase price, which would be $1,000 a coin. This has to be tracked on a trade by trade basis. And what you've got are these kids out there, and I know this because my youngest son, Joshua, a lot of you have met Joshua. My youngest son, Josh, trades on these Bitcoin platforms all the time and is on these Bitcoin chat room things, right? These correspondence deals. And these kids out there have no idea that trading these coins one for another creates a taxable transaction, but it does. So they have to be aware of that. Now, U.S. counsel have to be aware of that to inform your client what records they need to be keeping to report these transactions so they don't run into these problems. All right, so the second problem, top of page 4 of the outline, purchasing goods and services with crypto. A lot of people are enamored with the idea that they've got their wallet on their phone, and more retailers are accepting crypto in exchange for goods and services, and that's great. It's convenient, it's remarkable, it's all those things, except when you trade your Bitcoin, your crypto, whether it's Bitcoin or anything else, for goods and services, you've created a taxable transaction. It constitutes a sale. So if you go to the local diner that accepts Bitcoin in exchange for payment, and you buy a hamburger and French fries with your Bitcoin, you've created a taxable transaction that has to be reported. All right. So how does this work? All right. Suppose you're in a business as a CPA. We've got some people here that are in businesses as tax professionals. You're in business as a CPA. Your fee for services is $5,000 a year. The client engages your services and pays you with one Bitcoin. The fair market value of the coin as of the date paid is $5,000. That income, that is income to you. All right, that's income to you. It's measured by the fair market value of the crypto as of the date received. All right, so I think I got ahead of myself here. So let's back up. I got ahead of myself. I gave you the example for the second trade. Let's talk about the first trade, trading crypto for goods and services. You trade two Bitcoin, $5,000 each, for a used car worth $10,000. Your basis in the Bitcoin is $2,000. Each Bitcoin is considered sold at fair market value when you trade it for the car, right? So this is the hamburger example. I trade two Bitcoin worth $5,000 in exchange for a car worth $10,000, then I have sold my Bitcoin to buy that car. That's how it's treated for tax purposes. All right, the taxable gain is $3,000 per Bitcoin, which is the sale price less the basis. The basis in the car is 10 grand. That is my basis in the vehicle going forward. So buying a hamburger is no different than buying a car in this example. All right, now selling goods or services in exchange for crypto. That's where I got ahead of myself with the example. All right, the receipt of cryptocurrency in exchange for goods and services is taxable income to the recipient. So you're the CPA, your retainer fee is $5,000. That's what you charge your client to perform services for 1 year. Client gives you one Bitcoin worth $5,000 in exchange for those services. That $5,000 is income to you. It's got nothing to do with the client's basis in the Bitcoin. Their basis determines their capital gain or loss. You receive that Bitcoin at fair market value. That becomes your income. It's the date of received. Now, once you receive that Bitcoin, that becomes your asset, right? It's an asset. And you have a basis in that asset, and that basis is equal to the fair market value on the date of receipt. So what is the amount of money that you recognized as income on receipt of that crypto in exchange for services? That is your basis in the coin. All right, so if the client pays you $5,000 worth of if the client pays for pays $5,000 worth of services with one Bitcoin worth $5,000, your income is $5,000, has to be reported, but you also have basis in that coin equal to what you recognized, which is $5,000. Now, you own this asset. You've got this coin. Let's say later on you decide to sell it. All right, now you kick in the capital gain or loss consequences on this trade. All right, if you later sell the Bitcoin that you acquired in this earlier trade, let's say you sell it for $7,000 or $7,500, I have in the example, bottom of page four. You sell it for $7,500 at that time, you have a capital gain of $2,500. And if you sell it for $4,500, you have a capital loss of $500. Now you say, Dan, aren't I being taxed twice? No, you're not being taxed twice. The first transaction is an income tax transaction, which taxes the receipt of the crypto at fair market value in exchange for services. The second transaction is a capital gains transaction in which your basis in the coin is backed out of the sale. Remember, we had a $5,000 basis in the coin. You sold it for $7,500. You're not taxed on $7,500. You're taxed on the profit, which is $2,500. You already paid tax on the $5,000. So that becomes basis in the coin. Now the tax is the capital, is the amount of gain, or of course you could have a capital loss if you sell it for a loss. So that is, those are the three mistakes that our people are making on these coins. All right. The first mistake is not computing the gain or loss on the transfer of the coin. The second mistake is purchasing goods or services. The third mistake, selling crypto and not reporting the gains. So this is what you as a tax pro need to be aware of when you're dealing with clients, particularly these young people who have no appreciation for the tax consequences of what they're doing. Most of these people can't even, and this is not a rap on young people. This is true almost of everybody. Most people can't even fill out a form W-4 anymore for their employer. They've made it so complicated. And so we can't expect these people to know what the nuances of these tax consequences are with respect to crypto, because they're thinking of these coins as money, as currency, and they're not. They're a currency substitute. These coins are property. Just like as Nathan said, as I already mentioned, it's no different than a share of IBM stock or a bond or a mutual fund. It's treated exactly the same way. All right, that brings us up to polling question number three. Polling question number three. Remember, we need answers to all four polling questions. The answers to all four polling questions have to be provided to Gene in one email with your name and your PTIN and all of the four answers. So the polling question number four, or I'm sorry, number three, polling question number three, who presented the discussion on civil law issues? Who presented the discussion on civil law issues? That would be me, Dan Pilla, who presented the discussion on civil law issues. All right, so I'm going to give you just a couple of seconds to get that written down. Remember, polling question number one, what is today's date? Number two, who presented the criminal law discussion? That would be Nathan McPherson. Who presented the discussion on civil tax law? That would be Dan Pilla. All right, so now I am at the top of page five of the outline. All right, so you're following along with me. Let's go to top of page five of the outline. And let's talk about reporting crypto transactions. I touched on this in the opening remarks, and Nathan touched on it as well in his article. There is a question on the tax return that has to be answered yes or no. And just to show you how serious the IRS is about gathering the information that they're asking for, this question is at the very top of page of the 1040 form itself. It's not a supporting document. It doesn't go on the capital gains and losses Schedule D. It doesn't go there. It doesn't go on the Schedule C for businesses. It's on the top of the front page of the 1040 form right after you list your name and address. So they are serious about it. All right, you got to check the yes box. The yes box must be checked if during the taxable year, the taxpayer either received as a reward award, or payment for property or services. So if you received during the tax year, or sold, or exchanged, or gifted, or otherwise disposed of a digital asset, then you have to check the yes box. All right, so what are some examples of this? Taxpayer received a digital asset as payment for property or services, or received a digital asset as a result of a reward or award. Received a digital asset as a result of mining or staking or similar activity. So if you went out and you created your own crypto, you got to check the yes box. All right, you received digital assets as a result of a hard fork. I don't even know what a hard fork is. This comes out of the IRS's list. Maybe somebody can tell me what a hard fork is when we get to the question and answer section. Disposed of digital assets in exchange for property or services. Any disposition has to be reported. And of course, the capital gain or loss is now subject to being calculated. If you just outright sold a digital asset, if you transferred a digital asset for free without receiving any consideration, even as a bona fide gift, or you otherwise disposed of any other financial asset as a digital asset, a financial interest in a digital asset, you've got to check the yes box. So what is a financial interest? Essentially, we're talking about an interest that a person has a financial interest if the person is the owner of the digital asset, has an ownership stake in an account that holds the digital asset, and this includes the rights and obligations to acquire a financial interest, or C, owns a wallet that holds a digital asset. So these are the circumstances under which you've got to check that yes box. Now, who is not required to check the yes box? Let's talk about who's not required to check the yes box. If you merely hold the digital asset in the wallet or account without any trading activity, all right? So this is no trading activity. So if you acquired the asset in year one, you'd have to check the box. But if you're merely holding the asset, you'd have to check the yes box. But if you're merely holding the asset in year two with no trades, you wouldn't have to check the yes box. All right, transferring a digital asset from one wallet to account, or an account that you control to another wallet that you control. So merely transferring the physical means of holding that crypto does not require you to check the yes box. So I move, it's no different than moving my money from bank account A to bank account B. Moving the money from bank account A to bank account B does not create any sort of tax consequence. I've closed out my account in ABC Bank. I've opened a new account in the XYZ Bank. That's not a taxable transaction. Same thing with crypto. If I move it from my wallet that's held with this company and I put it in a wallet that's held with that company, that is not a reportable transaction. So you do not have to check the yes box in that situation. All right. If you're purchasing digital assets, using US or other real currency, including through the use of electronic platforms such as PayPal or Venmo, the purchase of the coin is not a disposition of the coin. You're acquiring it, right? You're purchasing it. So you don't have to check the yes box when you purchased it with your money. But now when you sell it, then you're going to be having disposed of it. So now you would check the yes box. So if you purchase the crypto in year A or year one, but don't dispose of it in year one, and you dispose of it in year two, now you would check the yes box, and then you would report the capital gains or losses. All right, the question has to be answered. All right, it's a yes or no question, and it has to be answered. And remember, some of you think back to the good old days of the all the prosecutions that were going on with respect to offshore bank accounts. They were prosecuting people for filing a false tax return for not checking the yes box on the Schedule B, which is the dividends and interest reporting form, where it asked you the question whether you had a ownership of or interest in an offshore bank account. And people were not answering the question at all. They were ignoring the question, and they were prosecuted for filing a false return for not answering the question. All right. That was assuming the IRS could prove you had an offshore account. So they got to answer the question. You can't just simply ignore the question, friends. So that is a very important thing for people to understand, is that you can't just ignore the problem by ignoring the question. That constitutes a false return. And as Nathan talked about earlier, the submission of a false return under penalty of perjury, which the taxpayer knows to be false at the time he signs the return, that's a felony offense. All right, that's a felony offense. It's a false tax return under oath. And you don't, you definitely do not want to get involved you want to advise clients that they don't want to get involved with submitting false statements to the IRS under penalty of perjury, because that is just the kiss of death. Why would you take that risk? Why would you encourage a client to take that risk? You would never do that. And we certainly want to make sure that the clients understand their reporting requirements. So speaking of reporting requirements, that brings us up to page 6 of the outline, which is the discussion of the tax forms that are used for reporting. Now, I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on this because we do want to get to questions here. And I know there are some questions because they're showing up on the chat box, and that's fine. So you just unmute. When I open it up for questions, you can just unmute yourself, or I'll unmute you, or I don't know how that works. Gene will come back. We'll figure that out when we get there. Anyway, the point is this. On page 6 of the outline, I've got a list there of where the digital asset transactions are reported. All right. So depending on how it's received, if it's ordinary income, if it's received in exchange for goods or services, it could be ordinary income, could be small business income. Certainly, if it's traded in the market, you buy it one day, you sell it the next day, you sell it for more than you bought it for, you've got capital gain income. If you sell it for less than you bought it for, you might have capital loss income. So it's going to be reported on the front page of the 1040 as wages or other income, or Schedule C or Schedule D, or it might be reported on Schedule A. It just depends on the circumstances. But you look at the chart there, you see what the transaction is, you see what the tax return is, where it's reported. And that's how you're going to treat it. Now, that's going to bring us up to polling question number 4. I'm now going to ask the final polling question. Remember, we need all 4 polling questions answered in one email to Gene. The email goes to gene@taxhelponline.com. It's got the answers to all 4 questions. It's got your full name. It's got your P10 so that we have all of the information. What is the topic of today's webinar? Question number 4. What is the topic of today's webinar? And that would be the tax consequences of cryptocurrency tax consequences, the basics, the fundamentals. That's what we're talking about here. Question number 1, what is today's date? Question number 2, who presented the discussion on criminal law issues? Question number 3, who presented the discussion on civil law issues? Question number 4, what is the topic of today's webinar? Those are the 4 polling questions that we need answers to. Now, what I want to do is bring Nathan back in here. Nathan, unmute yourself now, please.
Can you hear me?
What we're going to do is we're just going to tie a bow around this at this point in time. And so, Nathan, your final remarks before we entertain questions, go ahead.
Facts and circumstances test is probably a key buzzword. And are you engaged in exchanging, that is transmitting, that is somebody gives you money, you give cryptocurrency? This ties in with one of the questions I'd like to answer as one of the first questions. Are you acquiring an asset for investment and you might sell some of it to buy your most expensive burger you ever bought because the capital gain you're going to pay? You give the cryptocurrency to Bob's Diner. Or are you in basically a business, you're making extra money because people are giving you cash and you're giving them Bitcoin? And if I may, Dan, one of the questions.
Yeah, when go you ahead. Yeah, well,
that, okay. Oh, go ahead. Okay. Yeah. When you mentioned exchange, do you mean as in buying goods? And that's a great question. And the answer is no. And that's one of the exceptions in the Code of Federal Regulations, accepting and transmitting funds only integral to the sale of goods or the provision of services. other than money transmission services by the person who's accepting and transmitting the funds. In other words, the main thing when you go to Bob's Diner and get the burger and fries is not the cryptocurrency. It's you're there to get burger and fries and they're there to sell it to you. Or in the case of paying your CPA to do your returns or whatever, the main thing is getting your returns prepared, not the cryptocurrency. And the cryptocurrency is simply how you're paying for the goods or the services. Then that is not a transmission. That's an exception. And that's probably like a key exception when there is this exchange there. So great yes. question.
Yeah. So that's not going to entrap a simple exchange of crypto for goods or services. And so let me make a conclusory remark here just to tie a bow around what I said. And that is that the fundamental misunderstanding in the crypto world is that the crypto is in fact currency. No, it's a currency substitute. It's treated under the law as a currency substitute. It's treated for tax law as property. All right. No different than a share of IBM stock, no different than a used car, no different than a bond or a gold coin for that matter. That's how it's treated. And so when you trade this this asset for another asset, there is a disposition that has to be looked at. So go back through the outline, study the three mistakes that the people are making, and make sure that your clients are aware of this stuff. So now let's go on to questions here. Nathan, you already took the first one. So and there's another question here from DC, which I take to be Dion. When you mention exchange, do you mean as in buying goods? Is that what you already addressed, Nathan?
That's the question I answered. Yeah, that the exchange as far as buying goods. So the timestamp on that was during my presentation. So I assume it's me talking about the exchange.
Right.
So the buying goods, if you're buying something and paying for it, that does not constitute an exchange for the purpose of this money transmittal registration.
Right. So now she asked that they have a client who farms crypto. Should they be checking? Should be they asking whether he's registered under 31 USA? You wrote it should be USC. That's United States Code, Section 5330. So, Nathan, is that something that they should be registered to do if they're mining it?
Probably, because why are you mining it? Maybe the person's just amassing, wants to have a giant portfolio and retire eventually. But oftentimes those who are mining, in my experience, are starting businesses, they're mining and then they're selling it off, which would then be a money transmittal. So I would want a lot of information on what are you doing with your mining. We had a client, Dan, you helped with this. My dad was mainly the one handling it, but the guy who started mining over in Russia, I think it was, because the electricity was cheaper there and he was flying all around the world.
And he was spending tens of thousands of dollars a month on electricity to run these computers.
Yes. Yes. And then he walked into a seminar in Miami and was arrested by the feds. So.
Yeah, nothing funnier than that, right?
No.
Okay. Darren says he's got a client that's doing thousands of crypto trades a day. He says it's a mess. It sounds like a mess. Some of these clearinghouses now are doing pretty good reports. Mackenzie's done a couple of tax returns, and I'm sure you preparers have all done these now that have done hundreds of cryptos, hundreds of trades over the course of the year, maybe not hundreds a day. But they produce pretty good reports, but all of this stuff is subject to capital gain or loss, man. All of it is. So it really gets to be a mess. We got another question here. Where is the wallet held? Could it be considered offshore and possible trigger FBAR issues? Well, yeah, it certainly could be. The question, where is the wallet held? It's held in cyberspace someplace. I guess the question I would be asking is where is the company based? It'd be like a bank. I mean, your bank assets are cyberspace too, for the most part. But where is the foundation of the bank located? That raises a good question. Nathan, how do you respond to that?
I think the wallet is probably based where your iPhone or MacBook or whatever digital device is. And so, You're in America, you know, you got it on your iPhone or your MacBook or whatever, you're based in America, it's American.
Well, but my device moves with me. What happens when I go on vacation in Europe for a week and I carry my device with me as my wallet's moved, hasn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, well, so, and that begs the question. I just read this again. You know, I was aware of it, but I read it again. I'm trying to think. Oh, it was when I was checking in for my flight on the online app to check in for your flight. You know, they say don't put batteries in your check-on luggage. It has to be carried on, whatever else. You know, I acknowledge I don't have firearms. And then it had the big thing about 10,000 or more. It wasn't an international flight, but it still had this thing. If you have 10,000 or more of U.S. currency or equivalent, so even, you know, 10,000 euro or, you know, what would it be, you know, 50 million rubles or whatever, that would be 10,000 U.S. dollars. You have to report it and you can't transmit it. You know, you can't take it with you when you fly to Italy, even if you're going to pay cash for your case of wine. So that begs the question, yeah, if you have, you know, 50,000 worth of Bitcoin in your iPhone wallet app and you fly to Italy, is that taking it across?
I don't know.
I'd have to research that.
I don't know.
One thought as far as an FBAR requirement is if you're simply going and then coming back, your domicile is still US. So I think the domicile of your wallet is still US, but that requires some research. Maybe we want Scott to look that up.
It's something we might have to look at because
if the
wallet company, if the Bitcoin, if the clearing, what do they call that? A clearing center, right? If that's based in Zurich, let's say, is that where your wallet is?
Like having a Swiss bank account that might hold Apple stock or whatever, that's a US thing and it's for a US citizen, but you have your Swiss bank account that's holding.
Because I can certainly have my brokerage account on my phone. I can access my bank accounts off my phone. Where's the bank located? That's something that probably needs to be looked at. All right, yeah. So we got another comment here. This is Scott S, so Scott S, crypto exchange company was forced to cease offering services to U.S. citizens due to U.S. regulations and warned U.S. citizens they would not have access to accounts. U.S. citizen, a crypto holder of this company, was forced to transfer crypto assets to another company. Is there a valid argument that this should not be a taxable event? I don't think it is a taxable event. If all he's doing is moving the crypto from account A to account B, all right, he's changed brokerages essentially. He went from Morgan Stanley to Schwab. If there's no disposition of the asset, if the base of the asset, if the place of the asset is simply being moved from point A to point B, I don't think that's a taxable transaction. There has to be a disposition of the asset itself. All right, so you got to trade it for something or you got to sell it for something. Sell it for cash, U.S. currency, or trade it for goods or services. That's what creates the taxable event, not just moving it from account A to account B. You concur with that, Nathan?
Exactly. Yeah, it's the same. If you have 100 shares of IBM at UBS and you decide to go to Morgan Stanley instead and move your 100 shares over.
All right,
or if you have your 20 grand at U.S. Bank and you decide Wells Fargo's better. It's not a taxable event.
Right, exactly. So Rick Stout says that he can answer the hard fork question. So Rick, can you unmute yourself, please, and answer the hard fork question?
Yes. So you have to think of hard forks kind of like spinning off a division of a corporation. On the day that the spinoff happens, quite often the shareholders will get shares in both corporations. So like one Bitcoin will actually become two Bitcoins, and then you end up, and I say Bitcoin, but one cryptocurrency will become two separate types of cryptocurrency.
So it's like a stock split.
Yeah, but it's not a split because it's the it's more like a division is being spun off of a corporation, and now there are two completely different companies. What happens is it's a programmer term, forking. Programming and like online communities that develop programs and such, they're done by a group of people. Well, the same is done with crypto. So if this group of people that are working together, they start to have different opinions on how the cryptocurrency needs to work, when a fork happens on a program, then two programs start to exist that want to do different things. And so that's what happens with crypto. And that's what a hard fork is. It becomes two different types of cryptocurrency. And if you owned one cryptocurrency one on this day, now you own shares or you own crypto coins of this other cryptocurrency too at the same time.
All right, good. Thanks for that. Now, Rick, you also have insight on the wallet issue, offshore issue that we were bouncing around. Go ahead.
Okay, so talking about how if your phone holds your cryptocurrency, there are two different types of wallets. A cold wallet, which means that no one could possibly take your currency. All of your crypto hashes and everything exist on a specific device. And if you take that device with you, then that device is somewhere, whatever the location of that device is. But almost all wallets are online. So then it would be held wherever those servers are that hold it. But here's the other problem, that the blockchain, which is the biggest thing behind cryptocurrency, this ledger that everyone can see, exists on computers all around the world. So I believe that some good attorneys some good government attorneys are going to argue that these coins exist everywhere and probably could be subject to FinCEN requirements. Because if that ledger and your wallets and stuff exist outside of the country everywhere all the time, then you could have some reporting requirements there.
Well, let me ask you this question, Rick. What is your opinion right now on the state of the law with respect to reporting, filing an FBAR form to report crypto based on offshore holdings?
Well, my thought is that if you exist in the United States and you're using the computers in the United States and it's a worldwide thing, which means that there are going to be some portions of that ledger in the United States, I don't think that the reporting requirements are necessary because it's still kind of a U.S. account. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Do you see any noise being made by DOJ to rope this into an FBAR reporting thing?
Not yet. I think that all of the other things that they're trying to do right now are enough that, like what they were talking about, the shotgun approach, seeing what sticks. Right. Until they find something that all of those things don't stick, then they don't need to find anything else to make stick.
Right. All right. Well, Rick, thanks for your input. I appreciate that. All right. There aren't any more questions on the chat. Does anybody else have a question? If you want to put it in the chat, you can do that. If you don't want to put it in the chat, you can simply unmute yourself and ask your question, and then we will try to get an answer for you. So go ahead and please do that. If anybody's got a question, go ahead and unmute yourself right now. Ask the question. Otherwise, you can put it in the chat box. If you put it in the chat box, that's helpful. We can read it right off the chat box, but I don't care. It makes no difference to me what a man does for a living, you understand? So just go ahead and ask your question if somebody's got one.
I have a question.
All right, go on, Dion.
On the forms page where it says if you receive it as payment for services provided, right? Since my company is an S Corp, if I receive it into my S Corp, is the only way to receive this personally, or do I report it on my S Corp?
No, you'd report it on your S Corp. And that's a good point because we don't have the S Corp return shown there. But it really should be, because if you are performing services for people in the tax resolution business and tax preparation business as an S corporation, they are paying the S corp for the services. So the S corp would report the income.
Okay. And the same on the can I ask another one?
Yeah.
Okay. On the 8283, well, I just want to make sure, I don't want to be selfish. Does it have the same $500 limit? Like if whatever's received is under the 500, is the 8283 still required?
Right. Yes. If it's over $500, you got to attach the form to it. Yes.
But under, we don't need it.
Under, you don't need it.
Okay.
That's right. All right. So there's that question. Anybody else? If you want to put it in the chat box, please do. If you want to unmute yourself and ask the question, just go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question. Anybody else? All right, questions going once, questions going twice, questions going three times. Anybody else?